This is Gary Lactus, and welcome to Silence! Wait a minute. This silence doesn't have a number, because today I, Gary Lactus, am speaking to someone who is beyond numbers. It is the incomparable Paul John Milne. Hello, Paul. Are you there?
Hello. Yes, I am here.
Good.
And I am incomparable.
You are. I've tried. Spent days just trying to find something, but there is nothing. I can tell you, there's nothing. I've lost my pen. That's a good start, isn't it?
Oh, I was going to swear at you there, but I don't know if it is.
It's a good job I'm at work and I've got plenty of pens.
At the pen factory.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, all sorts of pens. The factory's called Pen Island. Oh, you got to be careful how you space those two words, of course, amusingly.
Yes. Yes. Or you'll get penis land, and that doesn't mean anything.
No. Thank you for joining us, Paul. You haven't come on Silence before, have you?
No, I just didn't have the technology.
But you're finally now speaking to you down a landline, like the 90s,
yeah,
which is, you know, a big part of your influence, I suppose. So it's sort of appropriate.
I'm afraid so.
Yes. This is the Beast Must Die is incredibly busy with his exciting life currently, so he can't be with us, and. As ever, it's actually been more than a week since the last episode, so I thought, dear listener, that I would try and cobble some content together. And when you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel, who do you call? Paul John Milne.
Hiya!
I'd like to talk to you about you,
if
that's
you.
All right. I mean, we may digress. You know how these things go.
Mm-hmm.
But Paul John Milne, creator of wildly imaginative and funny comics, such as, I think we'll go through them, shall we, chronologically. Let's start off. Paul John Milne, you are a child.
Ooh.
At some point, you become exposed to comics. What are they? And what was the impression that was given? What did your damage?
Blah, blah, blah. Well, I suppose like most of people like us, yeah, that's like a sentence, yeah. probably Beano and the Dandy and stuff to begin with. And also Urwally and the Bruins.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but they were didn't really seem like comics, they just kind of felt like things that were there.
Hmm.
But then I started getting the Transformers comic. Whee.
Ah, Transformers, right.
Yes. And I read that a lot because I liked Transformers. And also it was a good comic, so that was lucky.
Hmm. Yeah.
And I'd copy the pictures out of that loads, and I'd always designed Transformers to transform into anything in the world. But then just mainly turned into either a house or a shark.
So you got that ignited sort of creativity in you.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I remember there was in an early issue of Transformers, there was a design your own Transformer, and there was one guy who did this Transformer can turn into anything.
Yeah.
That I remember. Yes. I've sold all my Transformers because they're worth lots of money. So,
Not mine.
No. What, are they the UK ones, the later ones?
Yeah. No, I think mine are in such a horrible state that I think they all just got chucked out.
Ah, right, okay.
Yeah.
By you?
I assume by the parents, or my brother probably burned them or something in a weird kind of act of bullying that was good for him but didn't really bother me.
Right, right. But set you on the road to... stepping up and becoming the man you are today.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm muscled up and took charge of my own life.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, yeah. Triumph in the face of adversity.
Yep.
Yeah, I've never had that. I've never had that experience of like, but my comics, like, you know, if it's not one problem, it's another. It's it was always sort of encouraged, and it was like, oh, you know, and Fraser finds them so inspirational. And
who's Fraser?
Oh, I mean Gary Lactis. Yeah, Gary. You know my pseudonym.
Of course, of course.
Fraser Geeson. Yeah, you may have come across that at some point, but easy to forget. So yeah, if it's not one problem, it's another. And now my problem is like sort of getting rid of comics to make space, because I live in a flat that isn't big enough for a family of three. a spaceship that isn't big enough for a family of three, of course.
It's just flat because of the sort of 4D dimensions that make it appear flat to, I don't know,
people. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, there's some repairs need doing, let's say. So Transformers, and then
Turtles comic, because I liked Turtles more than Transformers at that point. But
right,
not a great comic, but I don't know, it made me happy, and that's what counts.
So we're talking late 80s, early
90s? Yeah, kind of 1989 to probably 91 or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then after that, I went on holiday to Mallorca with the family and picked up an issue of Wolverine there. And it ruined my life.
So that started Problem X.
All that crap, yeah.
right. In the 90s, in the perfect time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good because it wasn't really about anything other than Wolverine going to a sleazy hotel with Mystique. And it was very confusing. But
was it in English?
Yes. Because they always seem to just have a random selection of Marvel comics for like little nerd tourists like me.
Ah,
and that's mostly where I got comics for like about 3 years. I've just been on holiday.
It wasn't like, you know, I was wondering if like, because of course in a lot of European countries, films are subtitled, aren't they? And you know, that sort of helps people become, you know, bilingual. I wonder if they do that with comics, kind of like Rupert, you know, like you have your Norwegian subtitles underneath your English balloons. I doubt it. There wouldn't be room, would there? That would you'd have to elongate
not with all
the pages.
All the guns and pouches and everything. Ha ha ha! The 90s.
Yeah, it's true though.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it's also just, not a problem.
No. What's your relationship with that sort of, you know, X-Force image, early Image, Liefeld style business now?
I'm currently at the... I've come back round past contrarianism to a kind of super contrarianism where I think they're dog shit.
Right.
Okay. I know there's like the whole thing that's like, yeah, early Liefeld, Image comics, they're brilliant. Yes, they're not.
I tried as well.
Those artists can do some really good stuff, and most of that was kind of at Marvel when they had flat colours and good inkers that were, I don't know, making it look good and not just tracing their art. Whereas like as soon as like Liefeld went away to Image, it was people that were kind of doing what he wanted them to do, and it didn't really suit his work at all, and it just made it realise that we're not very good.
Right.
So I was feeling bad as I was saying all that.
But in that dog shit, you find inspiration, don't you?
Oh yeah, really? there's definitely something there.
So you get into all that, and then so when did you draw your first comic? Because I went back through everything I'd done recently, and I think I did my first comic called Comic Collector, which is like half a page in a comic that I did with my school friend Zach.
Right.
I think I must have been about eight, something like that, seven or eight, and we did one copy because my dad had a photocopier.
Ooh, very
so
fancy.
An addition of two. So when did you start actually drawing narrative?
Probably would have been around about the same age, I suppose. I'd just draw stuff with looked kind of like Beano kind of stuff, things like that.
Yeah.
Mainly kind of, I don't know, parochial British nonsense with vicars and things. You know how it was.
Does any of that survive?
Not by me, but I don't know. Maybe my parents have some of it, I don't know, but I don't want to know.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it is quite disturbing going back and look, it's hard to not not see yourself as you.
Yeah.
You know. Of course this is done by a child. You know. Yeah. Any other child you'd be like, oh wow, that's really good. You're really motivated and inspired and you know. But when it's yourself and you're looking at stuff you did at like 8, 9, 10, 11 years old, you're thinking, well, this is derivative shit. This is nonsense. Can you imagine saying that to some child? presenting
the perspective
this
is dreadful.
Yeah, yeah. It's very hard to be kind on yourself when you're creating stuff, you know. I don't know what purpose it would serve, you know, apart from I don't know. Instilling yourself with some sort of idea of yeah, yeah. You could, about what a legend you are. Yeah.
Yep. I remember one comic I did when I was about 13 or something. It's just, I think it was going to be a big epic, but ended up being 2 pages long, like those things always are. And it was about some like top secret assassins that get killed and then get brought back to life as a special killing team on the moon. but Death is their leader, but Death is a woman.
Oh. How progressive.
I know.
Had you read Sandman by that point?
I had not.
Did you ever get vertigized?
I did, eventually. I remember my friend's cool sister was like, oh, have you heard of Neil Gaiman? And then I read The Doll's House by Sandman. Yes, Sandman wrote and drew that. And then that seemed very good, and it was a lot better than whatever X-Men I was reading.
Yeah, yeah. And so then, did you have a period of like, because that's what keeps the sickness alive, isn't it? That sort of when you discover sort of mature comics,
yeah,
isn't it? You know, that's what prevents people like us from, you know, sort of abandoning comics altogether, you know, be it,
oh yeah,
be
serious,
it Vertigo,
serious themes
be it,
like leather and leather clubs.
Yeah, yeah. Or autobiographical comics. Did you ever get into the sort of fantagraphics side of things?
Kind of in the sort of mid-2000s when I was round about kind of the time everyone was like, yeah, teen comics, woo, comics can be anything they want, yay! I'll read these serious comics, and they're all, like a lot of the ones I read, they're very good while you're reading them, but there's not really much reason to go back to them to look at the art or anything, I find.
Right, yeah.
Not for me, anyway. Like, there's only so many pictures of a sad man's face that you can look at. Stick a pouch on that face and I'm interested.
Yeah, because you did have a little stab at autobiographical comics, didn't you, with Night Tapes.
Yeah. Yeah, but I kind of, at least, I tried to at least have fun drawing it.
Uh-huh.
Doing sort of nonsense digital collage crap.
Right, yeah.
But I just don't find it that interesting to do. I'd rather just sort of seed that kind of nonsense in my other comics with all the other stuff instead of making a dedicated little bio thing.
Yeah, yeah, sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. So when did you do your first thing, your first sort of comic that you reproduced and thought, oh, maybe someone will want to buy it, like that?
I think it was Guts Power 1, I think, which was maybe 2009, 2010, I can't remember.
Right, yeah, it was good.
the person I was seeing at the time was like, hey, you like comics and drawing, you should make a comic about basically how you're an unemployed wretch. I thought, yes, I will do that. Then, then I did that.
It was a good, it wasn't like a sort of straight up depiction of life on the dole.
Yeah.
You know, in the noughties, life in the noughties, unemployed. It was, what was it? It was a sort of sentient segue.
Yeah.
And, sort of, yeah, it's been a while and I couldn't dig them out because I couldn't get into my temple of tat.
Other than maybe the last couple of issues, I probably wouldn't recommend it.
Right. No, it was good. And, good. Yeah, a ridiculous plot. Your plots are always, like your MacGuffins are always bizarre and fun, I find. What was it there to get some money to repair the sentient Segway?
Oh yeah, because it's getting all gross and weird, eh?
Yeah. And then there's a lot of sort of horror. A lot of horror in your work.
It's fun to draw, I think.
Yeah.
Is what it mostly comes down to.
Yeah. There seems to be. I'm drawing a horror thing at the moment, written by Dan Cox.
Ooh.
And for that for Douglas Noble's A Pocket Chiller.
Oh yeah, I did one of those a couple of months ago.
Yes. Do check them out, dear listener.
Yeah, they're very good.
I got just yesterday. I got 80p sent to me via PayPal.
Oh yeah, I love those little things. Again, get little like, get 75p, and they can go and buy like a double decker or something.
Yeah,
I earned this double decker.
You get excited, you get an email saying, like, you know, Douglas Noble has sent you money. It's like, oh, all right. Or PayPal alert. You've got money in your account. And it's like, oh. And then you go, oh, yeah. But then it's just funny. It's a lovely thing to have this man, this wonderful man, doing all this admin for... Yeah. such little reward.
Yeah. I hope he gets something out of it.
Yeah, I think he does. Well, at the very least, I know he loves a spreadsheet, and so I think it means he gets to, like, you know, probably open a spreadsheet and enter some data.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to be able to help with that.
Yeah, I'm sure he loves doing that. I'm sure he'll be listening as well. So we'll do. Maybe I'll have a conversation with Douglas Noble another time, specifically about spreadsheets. That would be great. fantastic to listen to in an audio medium.
Yeah, finally the admin podcast that we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, it's kind of the podcast that Silence has always really wanted to be, but I think The Beast Must Die has been holding it back, really, you know, with his comics from 1988. Right, so that was that. That was late 2000s, 2009. Yes. You did three issues of that, didn't you?
I did six issues.
Six?
Yeah, just the last three. There was like a 5-year gap between three of them or something.
Did you do anything in between that?
I think I must have.
Yeah, because was that whilst you were studying? Was that long after?
Yeah, graduated in 2003.
Right, okay. So I don't actually know how old you are.
I'm pretty old.
Do you?
Yeah, I'm 41.
41? Oh, I actually can't remember. 40. I think I'm 47 currently. Something like that. That's boring. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Yeah. So, after that, what came after that? Was that your first? Did you do your first colour thing after that? It was night. Where did Night Tapes come?
Night Tapes. I was living with the parents when I made that, so it must have been about 2008.
Ah, right. Okay. So that was sort of
kind of around about the same time. It's quite early, I think. Yeah. I'm probably completely getting this wrong, but I'm picking to get the human face and...
Oh, yeah, get the human
tight
face.
Tight larks and things. I made all them kind of roundabout.
Tight larks. That was brilliant. That's a real favourite. That scratches my one-man anthology itch.
Yes, I actually like some of that as well, which is odd for me.
Yeah, no, that was great. It was that comic where that really solidified my love of your work.
Oh, if not you.
I'm trying not to do that lazy, you know, because obviously the thing we do is talk about what a piece of shit you are. Mm. amusingly.
You're correct to do so.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We're sort of parodying your own self-deprecation. Yeah.
When you're sort of famous and popular as I am, it's good to be taken down a peg or two.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that the thing that really catapulted you into the big time was, of course, your Grave Horticulture. That was your first colour work, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, and yes.
That was a real step up because your use of colour is a bit of a revelation, really. It's so vivid, and the way it, because you've got this, I mean, you've kind of got a Cronenbergian, for want of a better term. The thing is, I'm not that into Cronenberg, but I am into you in your work. Uh-huh. So, like, I don't want to make the comparison again, the incomparable Paul John Milne. Mm. Because like a lot of the time your figures will sort of have as much weight as backgrounds, yeah. You know, in terms of like the busyness. You don't often simplify a background in order to make a foreground character stand out, or you know, or to define it better. You do that. You do that with colour, and like a really good example of that is the Gravelly Grove allotments in Grave Horticulture issue 1, where it can be a bit of an optical illusion if you're like if you're looking at this in black and white. You'd have to stare at it for a bit, like a magic eye picture, to like pick stuff out. But you're defining things with colour, and your high contrast palettes. Are great. I remember you talking once about. The Brian Bolland recolored Killing Joke.
Yeah,
got rid. You know, you're talking about his. Oh yeah, sky is blue, grass is green. And I'm completely guilty of that as well. It's what I do. I think I'm just learning now not to colour the sky blue.
That sort of thing, it can be fine. It's just it seemed like a very lazy and odd way to recolor like a comic that was well known for having a really interesting color in.
You're completely right. Yeah, I still can't see grass as not green though. It's I think that's the Mr. Men influence, really.
No, that makes sense. Men has great backgrounds and stuff though. So, and shoes.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Yeah, yeah. Good, clear storytelling. It's Steve Dillon and Roger Hargreaves. This two peas in a pod, really.
Yep.
And that was great. Grave Horticulture is about a team of kind of occult heroes who a crazy bunch. You've got a vegan vampire. Hellstrom, Damien Hellstrom,
yes,
type character, yeah, who's the son of Satan.
Hmm.
Um, and there's, you know, there's a sort of demon with a with a sort of triangular portal for a head that comes through from another dimension, and it's all about what is it
the high concept was that it was just Marvel's Midnight Suns but done right, but then it kind of got away from me and turned into whatever it is.
Right, I never read Midnight Suns.
Well, you're right not to. There's lots of great art and potential, but none of it is realised because it's the cusp of Marvel just getting into computer colouring and lettering and having bad artists.
Right.
So just as anything starts picking up any steam or anything, a head of steam, or a flaming head like the Ghost Rider.
Yes.
It kind of just turns to shit.
Head of steam. That was that could be one of your characters, couldn't it?
I know,
isn't it, Paul? But in between issues, because there was three lovely perfect bound issues, mm-hmm. of that, in between two and three you did Hardships, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so you took a break from and this is back to black and white. This is great though. I love the self-contained nature of this.
Yeah, I like doing that sort of thing. It's because you can make it and then just put it out of your mind forever.
And the all the spaceships are different kinds of based around different types of shoe, aren't they? It's like it's like the ridiculous platform high heel spaceship. Yeah, like what a great idea, and it looks so cool as well. Lots of greebling on everything, which is a term. Are you aware of that term, greebling?
No, it sounds quite early 90s.
I think it's a 70s term, based around sort of, you know, the you know, all that stuff. I think it was a term invented, I think, whilst the Millennium Falcon was being designed.
I just seemed like bits of stuff, bits of crap on the side of things.
Yeah, like, you know, panels and pipes and shit. Yeah, yeah, it's just sort of general greebling.
Yeah.
So that was great. I can't actually remember what happened in that. Oh, it was just like a ridiculous sort of steroidal people battling for just because that's what they do.
Yeah, it's my attempt at space opera filtered through a kind of queer fetish sensibility.
Yes. Yeah. 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 And there's an abundance of queer characters in your work as well, which is always nice to see.
Yeah.
That was great. I'm flicking. Sorry, I've got it in front of me now. This what's this? You've got like you've got a sort of like a celestial type thing. What is it? The entropic bustle, the last human conglom leverage hubs. The language is great. And where does that come from?
I think it's kind of going for a sort of Kirby declarative sort of thing. But then I don't know if I can really do that kind of thing properly, so it just ended up being whatever it is. And it was a lot of fun to write.
Yeah, yeah. It's especially things like you did your Stacked Dads in the IKEA anthology as well. Just the turns of phrase. They seem to come from 80s jock characters. And yeah, it's odd. It's like the characters in American children's TV who you're supposed to think are the cool ones, you know?
Yeah, but they're just these awful, yeah, kind of ugly American kind of thing.
Yeah. It's that you seem to have an obsession with that. I can see sort of that coming from Turtles a bit as well.
Yeah, and just
with all the cowabunga, etc.
Adverts in American comics as well, Like they all have that sort of pitchy kind of quality to them. When, just these horrible little kids with baseball caps, just kind of being radical.
Yes.
And it's just it's supposed to be kind of cool, and you want to be like them, but they're just horrible.
I like the complexity of that. It's a certain seam of culture that you're celebrating and vilifying at the same time. Mm-hmm. But it seems to be sort of being driven by that as well. Mm. By that. By this sort of circle of this stuff's great, but isn't it fucking shit? Oh, but it's great, but it's shit. But
yeah,
it's
exactly.
Great, but
that
it's
is
shit.
Sadly the world I'm trapped in.
But it creates this amazing stuff.
That's very kind.
And so that's really good. In terms of your style is, again, pretty incomparable. I can sort of see some of the... it's maybe a little like some of Ted McKeever in places, in terms of the kind of some of the abstraction that goes on.
Yeah,
And the thickness of the brush strokes.
Got Metropol a few years ago, and it was actually really nice to see that. It's like, it doesn't have to kind of all be properly delineated and make perfect vision sense. And that was, I wasn't kind of deliberately trying to copy him or anything, but it was one of those things when you kind of see something, like, yes, good. Good. I'm kind of going in a direction that's viable.
So that was, you sort of came across this direction independent of McKeever.
Mm-hmm. I think I was really more just kind of going for sort of, what if your early 90s people had more interest in inking? But I'm kind of not as talented as the interesting inkers like a Sienkiewicz or whatever, or as good at normal superhero stuff as even like your Liefelds and things. So it just ends up kind of looking like a kind of, Gary Panter almost kind of thing, I think.
Yeah. So you're not sort of directly influenced. I mean, it's always such a wanky and difficult to answer question. You know, I don't know where my forms come from.
Yeah.
But I mean, again, like looking back at some of the stuff, like I think I still draw certain things the same way that as I did when I was 14.
Ah, same. Yeah. Like, I notice a lot of the time there's still. Like bits that look like when I used to copy like Chris Bacalo Generation X comics and things like in the way that I'll draw a beard or something. And they'd be like, that looks exactly the same as back then, yeah.
That's quite an interesting point actually. Yeah, Bacalo, because he throughout Shade he sort of developed into a much more sort of stylized artist.
I think when I came to his stuff, it was kind of right after he'd finished Shade as well, and so he was kind of at his sort of that peak of not fisheye lenses, but kind of weird angles and things and pages that didn't quite make sense, but the flat colouring really helped it stand out.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But I remember he did some stuff in Morrison's X-Men run.
Mm-hmm.
Which was like, I remember there was these sort of very small panels of like, what are those? Oh, are their feet? What are they doing? I'm not quite sure.
That era of his work is that and the steampunk comic that he did with Joe Kelly. There's some really kind of interesting art in there, but served very badly by the colouring that tries to render everything and then doesn't help with the kind of making things actually able to be seen.
Mm.
Still looked really nice, but I don't know how great it is for storytelling.
So he's got a sort of intrinsically pleasing line, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost like he forgot the more interesting his forms became, the worse his storytelling became. I guess some of that's down to script, whoever's writing it as well, but Yeah, no, I can sort of see that now you say it in your work.
Mm.
But yeah, no, it seemed, I mean, like more than a great many people, it just seems to come from nowhere, your stuff, your style, your particular thickness of line, and that sort of the balance you've managed to hit of like just defining things.
Mm. Well, yeah, I'm trying hard not to just go in and really kind of insult myself about all that right now, so I won't bother doing that.
But that, and then, like, that brings us up to your latest venture, which is because now you're a big shot.
That's me.
Yeah, you've got your art book, Creep Heap.
Yeah.
Which I got a lovely little painted kind of bookmark type thing, which I'm not using as a bookmark because I'm worried that the paint will come off on the.
Yeah, I thought of that as well when I put them in the envelope. I should probably turn them facing the inside of the envelope, so just in case the ink rubs off on something.
And initially with this, I was a bit like, oh, an art book. Well, I mean, yeah, I'll get it because I love Paul John Milne's work.
Yeah.
But yeah, an art book, but, you know, just but, sort of it, but it's not a it.
It's
comic.
Not, it's not content, is it?
But here's the thing, it is. It is content. because, like, when presented with these single pages, these single images, it was really nice to, like, each page almost is like, it's like a concept for something, and I found it really, really stimulating. Just it. Imagining the scenes and the possibilities and what may have happened, and this I found this very interesting, a sort of artistic progression with your agony fixture encounter situation Epsilon, which is a collection of characters, isn't it? Which
yes.
It's like a sort of for a comic that doesn't exist.
Yeah, I was going to do a comic about like a sort of fighting tournament, but then realised that the actual logistics of doing that sort of sports tournament comic involves planning and talent and things. And so if I did do that now, it'd just be a done in one that didn't really have much to do with fighting and more just usual bozos.
And I'm imagining that comes from your, because you're a big fan of, you're a gamer, aren't you?
I wouldn't use that word.
Okay, well, you play computer
just
games.
Just a guy that plays computer games, yeah. Yeah. I'm just a guy that plays computer games.
Well, you're more of a gamer than me. Mm. Unfortunately, I would love to. But you do draw inspiration.
Like the Street Fighter 2s and stuff in the 90s were. They probably ruined my life even more than X-Men. Luckily, they both came at the same time.
But they are oddly if you've got an imagination, you know, and as we know from Neil Gaiman's appearance on Desert Island Discs, you know, he really feels sorry for people who don't have an imagination.
Oh, that's so kind of lovely of him.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got so much empathy. If empathy began with D, it could be one of his characters.
Dempathy,
yeah.
Depth. which would look like him, no doubt.
Oh yeah.
And
he'd take his shades down and just look at you really sympathetically, like, "Oh, you don't have an imagination, oh dear."
But when you're playing games, it's like, because they're stupid, right?
Oh yeah.
But your imagination like feels like, why are these people racing in these different lands? Like, what's the story here? You know, how do they all come together and have a race? Is the race important? Why banana skins? And you know, and you your brain sort of fills in the difference. And but what I like about these, I mean, apart from the names, you've got Terp, Stroy, Mevros, Tyne, Health. Health looks like Magnum PI.
Yeah.
Sort of steroidal Selleck. Wretched, who's a sort of pissed guy. Sympathy.
He's based on the stories you'd hear of John Hannah walking drunk around Edinburgh.
Oh, he looks like John Hannah. Right. Oh, that gets it. I get it. Lice. My favourite one is like is sort of this guy doing a kung fu pose. And this guy's his hand out and he's called Futile. That made me laugh a lot. And yeah, but it's great to sort of imagine what this comic would be. Mm-hmm. You know? But it looks here like it's not just brush. You've used quite a thin pen in places.
Yeah, but that one I used a fine liner to draw initially and then just went really quickly over it with a thick brush.
Yeah, it's the closest you get to sort of 90s Sean Phillips, you know?
Yeah, no, he's got chops.
Yeah, well, so do you. Yeah, enjoyed that a lot. And yeah, and it's fantastic. And it's only £5.
Yeah, and there's going to be three copies of it in Gosh Comics at some point.
Ooh. Yeah. Well, they'll get snaffled up pretty quick, yeah. I'd imagine. Yeah, and I'm in two minds about this, about your pricing, because I'm like, well, but you've really, you know, you're mugging yourself here. Mm. Like, but at the same time, I underprice everything I do because I think comics should be 60p.
Yeah, and it's I think no one would buy it if it was more expensive than that, and also the postage on top of it as well.
Yeah.
So, and it's not like I'm expecting to make money off of it anyway.
That's I'm in it for the art thing, isn't it? Yeah, so what would you say to what advice would you give to a young person thinking of getting into comics?
just loads of really mean stuff.
Just I don't know, I think
I'd probably say, oh no, that's really good, but I'd probably just think about how I didn't like it, and I don't know.
I think I'd beat them up.
Oh yeah, I'd begin by kicking sand in their face.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and that's either going to stop them from going down road to ruin, or inspire them and spur them on, and what they make would be better. I was thinking about the other day about approaching Thought Bubble to see if they would like to employ me as a jock.
the mindless ones should all get kind of like frat boy jackets made up.
Yeah, and so what I think what the jock does at a comics convention is go round and like pick up the comics and laugh at them and throw them on the ground and basically go around mocking everyone, because I think it's a motivator that is sort of missing in comics culture now. It's also accepted, you know.
Yeah,
it's just not.
And the cruel dirtbags of comics are cruel dirtbags in a really uninteresting and hateful way, and that's not what I want.
Yeah. And I think it would actually be good to sort of, you know, just sort of shake people up a bit, you know. Get them to you know, feel hurt and marginalised again.
Mm. Yeah.
You know.
Well, if you need, like, kind of a person to stand behind you in 3D glasses going, oh, yeah, boss, then just call me.
Yes. Oh, that would be great. That'd be great.
A snivelling weasel.
I really want to do this now, but obviously we can't, because like it would actually be involved being actually nasty to people,
yeah,
for a sort of high concept like joke. And yeah, we can't do that. But that would be perfect. I think I'm actually a bit old for it. I think I'd need to get I don't know.
We could pay some sort of actors fresh out of college to be our avatars.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if it was
you and me. if I had like, you know, a Letterman jacket. And, yeah. Maybe a football, an American football under my arm, you know.
And you're always punctuating acts of kind of slight cruelty by saying "go long" and then throwing the ball for me to catch.
Knocking your 3D glasses off.
And I see things like, good one, Gary.
maybe a selection of jocks. You could have a sort of leather jacket jock, you know. A kind of rock jock and sports jock, a snivelling jock like yourself. Rat jock. What other kind of jocks are there, really?
I think if you deviate too far from being a jock, then you're not allowed to be a jock anymore.
You could have some popular girls.
You just look dismissively down at people while filing their nails.
Yeah, yeah. That would be good.
And then they roll their eyes whenever you do anything.
But I kind of imagine them, they'd have to be sort of sat down. But maybe they'd have to, like, I don't know, you could wheel the popular girls around in wheelchairs. Or maybe they'd have to, like, carry their own stool and sort of set up in front of a stall. And then file their nails and look disinterested
for 5 minutes. Whenever anyone would see a comic.
Yeah. Fucking nerds. I mean,
this whole sensory experience could be one room in Thought Bubble.
Yes.
Sand all over the floor as well.
Why? Oh yeah, for kicking in faces, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, this is great.
God,
this is great.
Art's easy, isn't it?
This isn't art. This is social change. This is what I'm seeing. This is affirmative action.
See, my problem is that I see art everywhere because I'm a natural artist.
Yeah, me too. I mean, if only other people could see the world through our eyes, you know.
I feel sorry for people that don't, yeah.
Yeah, there would be... Yeah, if the world was just like that, you know, do we really need spreadsheets, you know? Do we really need food production and transport infrastructure? Do we really need that?
You don't need a bus when you're on the beach, bro.
Excellent. Well, that's that. Read anything good recently? Or bad?
I'm reading 90s Doctor Strange comics just now, which are almost good, but end up being quite bad.
In what way?
It's from the era when David Quinn, writer of the Outlaw comic, Faust, took over. And then Doctor Strange splits into three people, one of whom has spikes on his elbows.
Of course! I wasn't aware of that.
He's just called Strange. And he starts spelling magic with a K on the end, so you know it's not like your old style Doctor Strange. And
right,
it's almost interesting, but it's just not.
I've never read a Doctor Strange comic that I enjoyed. Not even the Ditko stuff, the early stuff. There's a problem that, you know, is happening on the astral plane, you know, it doesn't really matter, and then he just gets a cape or an amulet or something.
He's good in that Ecstatic Dead Girl miniseries from about 2010 or whatever the hell it was.
That's true. Yeah, when he's talking about his hemorrhoids.
Yeah, it's not really so much a Doctor Strange comic, though, is it? So.
No, no. Are you reading current? It's not Ecstatics anymore. It's The Excellent. Are you reading The Excellent?
I'm enjoying it. Yeah, it's fine. It's just more nice comics from the past that look worse than they used to.
Do they look worse?
It's just the whole Marvel production. It's gross. It's like if you shook it, like all the lettering would fall out of it or something.
Right, yeah.
It kind of looks like something you'd get free with a toy based on a film.
I'm not that sensitive to that. What's your idea? Like you know, the Beast Must Die. It's like, you know, late 80s, early 90s.
He's a prestige format guy.
Yeah. What's your sort of ideal age of production, you know, of the way things looked and felt? And
it's round about probably 1992, 1993.
Shiny Muscles started to appear.
When it had that kind of stuff, but all the big artists had moved away to Image, so they were getting their kind of good house artists to try and draw in that style by giving people more techno crap and bigger muscles. So it kind of looked like that sort of thing, but really competently done. And just before they sacked all the colourists and brought the computer people on board, and when lettering was all hand done as well, it looked like a kind of complete piece.
Yeah, hand lettering is something I'm very I like.
Yeah,
and I think it's important, really.
I think computer lettering, because I made a font of my handwriting that I then sort of trace over just so I can get the space and writing everything when I do lettering. And I don't think it looks great, and it probably would look better if I just used the font, but it just looks wrong to me.
Yeah, well, the thing is, your bubble and caption placement is so integral to
it should be part of the picture.
Yeah,
I don't think it's controversial to say this.
Yeah, and it's a consideration in like how you're positioning people as well. It's not like you're drawing the pictures and then going in and doing the bubbles, is it? I mean, it doesn't look like that.
Nah.
And do you write as you go along, or do you have a vague
structure, and then I'll tend to write a page the night before I draw it, just get the last thing at night, and then give it a look again in the morning, and then just kind of work on it one page at a time.
Right, are you a sort of page a day kind of guy?
I am, yeah. That's my jam.
That's good. That's a good rate, I'd say.
I've done things where I planned it all in advance, but then it just wasn't much fun to then go and make after I'd written it all out.
Yes. Yeah. And do you find yourself? Cause I find myself sort of changing dialogue,
changing
scripts, because it's like quite often it's because there's too many words. I've got to cut that down.
Yeah.
And or it's also like I need something to say here because what's happening visually isn't clear enough. So I'll pop something in. And also, sometimes it's like, do you know what? That bit of the panel just looks a bit empty. I'm gonna put some words in there just for that reason and that alone.
Do all that.
Yeah, but I think that's the best way of doing it.
Yeah,
and like writing and drawing.
When I've tried and script it out first as well, it does end up getting far too wordy. So I've given myself a kind of rule when I'm not allowed more than 20 words in a speech bubble, and that's like at the absolute most.
Yeah, yeah.
So, because my handwriting is quite big as well. So.
Do you have big hands?
They're all right. They're just normal hands, but very smooth.
And you're quite adamant about working with ink on paper, aren't you? You're not tempted by Procreate or, you know, getting a tablet.
I got a tablet last year, and it's very good for just colouring stuff in Photoshop because you can just draw around stuff instead of using a mouse and hurting my hand. But then I've tried to just do normal drawing and stuff on it as well, and it just feels wrong, and people probably couldn't tell the difference, but it just looks crap as well.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to see what you're like working on a screen. I'd like to see some of that.
There's too much opportunity to change stuff and things as well, which is means you can stick at something for ages instead of just drawing it, feeling the picture.
Right. You see, that's what I like, because I'm not as good at drawing. And
you're very good at drawing.
So I like the opportunity to like sort of tweak and get things right. I don't have the problem of like spending too long on something because I don't have the time in my life to spend on things. So having a child is probably, I've got all the time
in the world to fix things, but so you'd think my life was more put together than it is. But
I'm sorry. But I like your comics.
Thanks very much.
I'm sorry your life isn't together.
It's fine.
Good. Okay, that's good. I was trying to take it down a sort of a kind of emotional kind of I think I was trying to like bring some darkness out there of you, and make this a more compelling interview, that sort of thing. If you could talk about your relationship with your parents or something like that.
Oh, I've done that on podcasts before already by accident. It's no fun for anyone.
Yes, I've seen you. Mention things online, but we don't need to go into that. Of course, we don't.
If I'm going to be talking about dark things, I want it to be Dark Hawk. And, I don't know, other dark people from the 90s.
Like, what's your favourite dark? What's your favourite dark character? Do you think is it Ghost Rider? You're a big Ghost Rider guy, aren't you?
I like him in theory, but he's pretty boring. So,
I thought you said the other day you'd never read a bad Ghost Rider comic.
I can't have said that. If I said that, I was lying. I'm reading bad Ghost Rider comics right now.
Have you ever read a bad comic? Yes. Right. Okay. Well, I mean, we're sort of out of time. I'm at work. I'm going to have to start working in earnest. So, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And where can people find your product?
Oh, just Etsy. PGM Illustration, I think, is what it's under.
Okay.
And just look up Paul John Milne on Twitter or something, and that'll be a link there.
Yeah, you're not tempted by Instagram.
Nah.
No.
I just don't have the technology.
Oh, what, you don't have a phone?
I do have a phone, but it's very old and doesn't get the internet.
Right. What about your tablet?
It has to be fitted to my computer, and that involves putting things into my computer.
Nah. I'd give it a miss.
Yep.
Sounds like effort. I think you should probably just draw some comics.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Paul. And I think I'm going to see you at Thought Bubble.
Yes, I got my hotel just the other day.
Oh, lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Swanky? Shit?
Fine.
Fine. Good. Right. Well, until next time, when you join us again, dear listener, for another time of talking about comics and the like with me, Gary Lactus, from me, Gary Lactus.
Yes, and me probably.
Yeah,
Paul.
And me, Paul.
Space Paul.
What would be your podcast moniker? Have you got a fiction suit?
No.
And from no. No.
Except it's spelled N-E-A-U-X.
Yes. Yeah. No. Oh, yeah. A very 90s way of spelling it. Gaiman would your name would be spelled K-N-O-W, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. With a silent D at the front. The Gno. Until next time, dearest listener, thank you for joining us. Sorry about the delays. The Beast Must Die is busy and there's been terrible, terrible scheduling problems. And there's stuff up on Patreon. I'm doing another Fraser Geeson's Parasocial Unspectacular. I think there may be some more Starlight coming soon. And yes, do come and join us over on patreon.com/silence. And what else? Oh yeah, FraserGeeson.com. Buy my comics. Commission me to do a drawing, please. Milkthecat.wordpress.com for the work of Dan White, aka The Beast Must Die. And we'll see you next time. Here on Silence! Silence.